Good afternoon again. I have no financial disclosure. What I want to provide is a thumbnail sketch of why we need to be focusing on primary prevention, especially as it relates to the chronic non-communicable diseases. We have heard a lot about in terms of what needs to be done about screening, for example. Screening is a good example of secondary prevention, but I think we need to make the case for primary prevention, and that's what I hope to do in the next 15 minutes. Specify the role of primary prevention in reducing the global burden. So the scope of the talk this afternoon is the world. It's not limited to the United States or to any one particular nation. Third is to demonstrate the rationale and utility of multi-sectoral approaches to primary prevention of CNCDs. First, a little description of what CNCDs are. CNCDs are the chronic non-communicable diseases, more popularly now called as the non-communicable diseases. There's still some controversy in terms of the choice of this term, because more recently there have been reports that when we talk about non-communicable diseases, they do have an infectious element. For example, when you look at hepatitis B, hepatitis C, their linkage to hepatocellular carcinoma or lung or liver cancer, or when you look at HPV and its association with cervical cancer, if you're talking about cervical cancer as a non-communicable disease, then certainly we need to recognize the infectious component which is there. So I'm alerting in the sense that perhaps next year when the talk is on similar area or domain, it might be slightly different in terms of what the heading is. Globally, 36 million deaths out of the over 50 plus million deaths in 2008 were due to the chronic non-communicable diseases. And this constitutes 3 out of 5 deaths worldwide. The importance of this is most of the time we think about communicable diseases, especially when we think about the countries which are considered to be the developing economies. And now developing economies are usually considered as the low-income nations and the lower middle-income nations by the World Bank. It is not anything which is to do with the economic progress as such, but it is a convenient term which is used, or terminology which is used for this purpose. The NCD mortality exceeds that of communicable, maternal, perinatal, and nutritional conditions combined. I stop here because I want you to digest that. Even though we all the time think in terms of, for example, the global pandemic of HIV, we talk about the diarrheal diseases, the 3.5 million deaths which occur due to diarrheal diseases, another 1.5 million due to the acute respiratory infections in the under 5, preventable, most of them preventable. But when you put all those things together and the very high, completely preventable, I would say almost completely preventable maternal mortality, especially in certain regions of the world, certain countries within those regions, it's incredible that the damage which is done by the NCD is phenomenal, And this is burden is expected to increase in the future. Now you may wonder why it may increase. There are at least two good reasons. One, the population itself is increasing. If you're all going to live, then we are going to get some disease. We can only dodge with so much of tap dancing, but we are going to get some bullet somewhere. The second thing is that we are all aging. We can rely on Botox, but the point is that we are still aging. And what that means is these are the diseases of aging. When you look at the top 5 conditions over there, they are the heart disease, there's cancer, there's stroke, there's chronic obstructive lung diseases, asthma, so on and so forth in one bundle, and then diabetes. Diabetes particularly type 2. So when you look at those diseases over there, they are to a certain extent perhaps the most important epidemiological variable is age. So if you're all going to live longer, which we should, there's no reason why we shouldn't, but we have to be alert that this is something which is going to be with us. The top killer CNCDs, which is what I mentioned before, and as you can see over here, the cardiovascular diseases is the blue one, that's the big one over here, and then you have the cancers, and then chronic respiratory disease, which is kind of a mauve color, and then you have the diabetes, digestive diseases, and other non-communicable diseases. One question which obviously arises is, if you're looking at the global picture like this, where is the burden going to be? The burden is going to be, and it is already is, in the developing economies. It is in the lower income nations, it is in the lower middle income nations, because those are the places where the population is huge, and the time it has taken for the population to reach certain levels of life expectancy has been quicker. A very good example of that is South Korea. South Korea took about 26 years for it to reach where Western Europe took 60 years to reach in terms of life expectancy. So, and how is that possible? Because of some of the things which I talked about before. Good vaccines, better nutrition, control of environmental sanitation, better habitat, in spite of the fact that those are still challenges, but people who have been able to reach those things have had a real meteoric rise in terms of their life expectancy. The burden of CNC is in terms of morbidity. Morbidity data is very imprecise. That's perhaps the reasons why the epidemiologists are always favorable to deaths. Either one is alive or one is dead. That's the way they look at it. It is a dichotomous situation, unless one is with the National Enquirer. But the point is that morbidity is tough, but still, whatever data which we have, you can see that morbidity is also considerably high and is projected to be much, much, much higher. And that's the point which I was trying to underscore, is that the cancer diagnosis, two out of the three cancer diagnoses, the new ones, are going to be in the low and middle income nations. And that's what the burden is going to be. When we look at the disability usually we look at the dailies. The daily is the number of potential productive years of life lost due to premature ill health, disability, or early death, which means that if a person could have lived up to 65, person dies at the age of 20, then 45 years is certainly the lost daily in terms of that particular individual. And you can see that CNCDs will lead to three times as many daily as communicable diseases, maternal, perinatal, and nutritional conditions. And that's worrisome. That's worrisome. It's not because these diseases are occurring early in life. It is because of the quantum, the number of people who are affected by these diseases, even though they are occurring at a much later stage in our lifespan, but just the sheer numbers of the cases are producing these diseases. And the fiscal impact over here, you can see what the fiscal impact of these diseases is going to be for 2010 and 2030. And one of the things which I wanted to point out is when you look at these numbers, after some time it sort of glazes over. To give you a perspective, I pulled out some data and it shows that in 2009, the entire global health spending was $5.1 trillion. The entire global health spending in 2009 was $5.1 trillion. And the entire annual GDP of the low-income nations was $1 trillion. It was less than $1 trillion. Low-income nations is $1 trillion. And here we are talking about a cardiovascular disease itself, which is going to be $1.04 trillion. We are talking about mental illness. We don't even, most of the times, don't talk about mental illness. And that's going to be $6 trillion. So the challenge is going to be, where is the money going to come from? And especially when it is going to be affecting the people who already are hurting. To give you one example of that is 2.5 billion people are living under less than $2 per day, and they will need $18 trillion in transfers to bring them above the poverty line for the next 20 years. So when we look at those kind of data over here, this is a big player. This is a big player. When you think about the risk factors for CNCs, we always talk about the risk factors as being modifiable and non-modifiable. The non-modifiable are the ones which we wish we could change. We can lie about our age, we can change our gender, and we can disown our relatives, but the risk for diseases doesn't change. But the modifiable ones are the ones which are intricately connected with the chronic non-communicable diseases, and the four which are highlighted over here, the tobacco use, the insufficient physical activity, and alcohol misuse, sometimes called the harmful use of alcohol, and the unhealthy diet constitute the bulk of the five diseases which I mentioned, or five categories or groups of diseases which I mentioned as the major challenges in the world right now. And they also, if you can see that they're also indirectly associated with overweight and obesity and high cholesterol. For example, whether it is insufficient physical activity in a combination with unhealthy diet is certainly linked to overweight and obesity. So they're all in the same basket. Even though they're listed separately, they're all in the same basket. And when we look at individuals, we got to keep that in mind, that they're probably occurring in the same individuals. Why focus on primary prevention? We focus on primary prevention because one of the strategies which the World Health Organization put together in 2008 for the five-year action plan, there are six objectives over there, and one of the objectives, that's objective three, is to promote interventions to reduce the main shared modifiable. And that's why I classified it and showed you what the modifiable risk factors for non-communicable diseases, and the predominant ones, the four which we talked about, is the tobacco use, unhealthy diets, physical inactivity, and harmful use of alcohol. The primary prevention has added benefits, and we know that at this point in time, while we stand here in 2012 or you're sitting over there in 2012, it doesn't matter, but we don't have cure for most of the diseases, the chronic diseases. And we can manage them very well or may not be able to manage them very well depending on what circumstances we are, but the reality is there's no cure. There's no cure for it. I just gave an example over there. And most of the CNCDs are preventable until much later in life. So, except when we get cancers when we are really, really old, or when we get heart disease or get heart failure when we are really, really old. And what is really, really old? Please don't ask me that, because age is a relative thing. But the point is that we can prevent these things when these are occurring at younger ages. And that is one of the reasons why we need to take a lifespan approach to the prevention. For example, if a child is not eating broccoli at 5 years of age, the child becomes a president of the United States, still won't eat broccoli. Still won't eat it. So the habits are formed. Habits are formed earlier in life. It is absolutely essential that we recognize that and then try to make modifications, if essential, or to strengthen, or to remove, or eliminate. Whatever might be the risk factor, depending on its nature, we need to do that. The four modifiable risk factors, we said, account for a large proportion. What it means is it gives us targets. So we are not simply shooting in the coming to a dark room and then trying to find the black cat and trying to shoot it. No, we are not, without any light. But the point is that we know those four risk factors. We know that those four interventions, those risk factors can be taken care of with interventions, and we have to focus our attention. The individual can be assisted with supportive policies and programs. This is important, because one of the things which you are all familiar with is when we ask people to lose weight or to quit smoking or to eat healthy, and I'm the first one to admit, did I have my 5 servings of vegetables and fruits? No, not today. I'm going to have it later.
But don't ask him when is the later.
Yeah.
That's the $1 million.
Thank God. So the question is, so that what it means is individual responsibility is absolutely essential, but there also has to be what some people now call as social responsibility or public responsibility. And what is that public responsibility? Is the risk reduction, which we want. And I say risk reduction because we cannot jump over to risk elimination, just like we talk about disease agent elimination, and then we talk about eradication of the disease. Same way, we got to look at risk reduction right now. And the collaborative effort, the social determinants. What are the social determinants? The income disparities, for example, the poverty, for example, the habitat where people are in. Those things, those cannot be taken care of by the individual, especially individuals who don't have control over their own resources, and that's important. This provides the individual with needed help to modify his or her behavior, and it is what is key is not modifying it. Key is maintaining that modification. It is maintaining that. The people will say that I quit smoking 20 times, so what's the big hoopla about quitting smoking? The hoopla about quitting smoking is the 19 times which has occurred after the first time. It shouldn't have occurred, and that's the challenge. And there's also synergism between sectors which allows for enhancement of desired outcomes. To give you one quick example of that is education and nutrition, nutrition and health, agriculture and nutrition. And so there are lots of such examples which you can look at. And that's what is captured over here. I don't want to, given the interest of time, I don't want to go over each one of them. But you can see that when we take the risk factors which are provided in the top, like tobacco, poor diet, nutrition, etc., and you have the sectors which are presented on the left side, the first column over there, you can see that there is a lot of overlapping, more like a Venn diagram with these things, and they can be very fruitfully put to use. The categories of interventions, when you read that, many times you'll see the best buy interventions, and that's a very common phraseology which is now being used. They're highly cost-effective, they're inexpensive, feasible, culturally acceptable to implement. In fact, there are interventions which take only about 40 cents in developing nations, which is the low income and the low middle income, and upper income nations such as here, and that costs only about $3. These cost only $3. For $3, we might be able to make a dent in these things. And so it's not a lot of money which we are looking at, but it is the ability to channel the money, bring people together, and create that partnership between what I call as the public responsibility and the individual responsibility, and not lose interest. Not lose interest. So it's not the headline for today, and tomorrow there's going to be another headline. Sandy is gone. Who's going to be next? it's not that. It is something which is going to be sustained, because as I said, we are going to be aging, we are going to be growing, and so we need to have that. So some of the Best Buy interventions are over here, whether it is tobacco use, harmful alcohol use. You can see that a lot of them are public responsibility. The tax increase is not created by one individual. It is a societal policy which comes over here. There's reduced salt intake in food, which is in the unhealthy diet and physical inactivity, which certainly is an individual responsibility. The key is to find that optimum mix, which will bring about the desired change. That's what it is. So we know what works. We may not know all the answers. Probably we'll never know all the answers. But it is important to start those. This is one which tells us whether it is covered by health insurance, whether it is government-sponsored, whether it is society, whether it is sometimes private insurance. And you can see, more I would like to focus your attention on the right side of this graph. And you can see that if you are in a poorer country, low-income nation, the opportunity for health insurance is low. And I don't have to give you any more examples. Why low-income countries? Here in the United States, one of the richest nations over here, if we don't have health insurance, then our access is curtailed. We don't like that word which begins with R. It's a dirty word. It's called rationing. But it is rationing. If I don't have health insurance, I can't access it. I can't access primary care, and that's what we are talking about. The primary prevention is what we are talking about. We won't be. So in conclusion, primary prevention has a necessary and valuable role in reducing the burden of NCDs, and it is at the individual level, whether it is at the community level, whether it's at the national level. And multi-sectoral approaches are helpful to strengthen the actions which are taken by individuals for behavioral change. And as I said, the key is not simply the behavioral change, but what comes after it. That's the maintenance of the behavioral change. And public-private partnerships can be beneficial in prevention of CNCDs, because one thing which I didn't touch on, but which I want to reiterate over here, is if we have a healthy community, we have a healthy workforce. And when you have a healthy workforce, you have better productivity. And if you have better productivity, you probably also can have a better quality. If you have a better quality, your profits are going to be ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And the private sector will understand that pretty well. Thank you.